And it's Charlie Harper back, Georgia Pole Radio, in the studio with John Richards, Stephen Turkheimer, Sully from The Sully Show, and on hold we have Randy. But before we go to Randy, right before I realized we should have already been break, I'd asked John Richards a question. I just asserted that I really think Jeb Bush probably should just go and drop out of the race because when we talk about people that have underperformed expectations, he's probably even above Trump in that thus far. And so, John, you had a comment on that. We'll just pick up right there.
Right, and you pointed out earlier that Jeb Bush had spent all of this money trying to go after Marco Rubio, who until really Iowa was sunk down in third or fourth place. He was somebody Bush was trying to campaign against. My question is, why didn't he go after Cruz or Trump, who it would seem would have been his better competition?
I think it goes back. My answer would be because of the number of tickets out of Iowa, and he figured Trump had one, but he from the home state of Florida, Rubio is his natural rival to get one of those seats, and he needed the person more like him out of the way, if you will. I don't want to say more like him, but the natural constituency of his voter is likely to be split, both on geography as well as a Jeb voter and a Trump voter aren't the same voter. Those were the two that start out most polar apart.
If he attacks Trump, it's going to go to Cruz. If he attacks Cruz, it'll go to Trump. If he attacks them both, it'll go to Carson. He's not going to get any of the benefit there. The only person he can take votes from probably is Rubio. But the problem that the super PAC has for Jeb Bush is that the issues that used to be important to Republicans are no longer important to Republicans. And so his sort of fiscal sanity and the decisions he made.
Some Republicans, as trumped up by the media, that only got a much smaller percentage of the vote than people have been saying for a year. So I'm not going to let that one go by.
Let me point out, having seen both Bush and Rubio essentially give their stump speeches, admittedly this was earlier last year, when both candidates were in town, their positions are actually fairly similar.
Rubio and Bush.
Yeah. Now, Rubio gives
See,
more
there
of
you
a,
go, giving that establishment fodder back to people right after I just gave all of Rubio's conservative ratings.
I think that was probably true last year. I think Rubio has slid a little bit. I think what Rubio's goal is to get the establishment support without taking the establishment positions and without getting the establishment label.
Well, that's ultimately how you win, is it not?
Oh, yeah.
You convert the establishment to your side. Ellen Carmichael, a friend of mine at the site Opportunity Lives, had a great op-ed on that right around Christmas. I'm going to repost it sometime later this week just to bring that entire subject up, because if somebody with that level of conservative rankings, real conservative rankings, ultimately wins, that doesn't mean the establishment won. That means you won by converting them to your side. Let's call up Randy and see what's on Randy's mind today. And all right, Randy, what'd we do to upset you today, man?
Oh, you're not upsetting me, man. I hope everybody's doing good.
We're awesome. You know, how about yourself?
Oh, I'm great, man. Painting the house. It's beautiful. I'm on the sunny side this morning.
Good side to be on today.
Absolutely, mentally and physically. Hey, one of the things with Rubio that kind of makes some of us conservatives concerned is when he hooks up with Chuck Schumer on that Gang of Eight thing. But that's not really what I wanted to ask about. I wanted to ask Stephen, being a lawyer, maybe you could enlighten me on something. You know, hey, appreciate it, Stephen. If you're caught inside a store with your pockets full of merchandise and a security guard catches you, you can't just say, oh, okay, and put it back on the shelf, and they say, it's cool. Why wasn't Marco Rubio prosecuted when they caught him pilfering money by charging personal items on his government credit card down there in Florida?
That is a fantastic question, and it is one probably best suited for the district attorney in whatever county that is in Florida, Leon County probably, Tallahassee. But it's a wonderful question. And the answer is, sadly, is that all of the people in the GOP do it. And so they were like, well, no, that's standard operating.
On.
No, not GOP nationwide.
Hold on, let me respond.
This is actually true. The GOP in Florida basically said that's standard operating procedure for people in that position, therefore he wasn't stealing. That was actually the defense. And that's okay. That's okay. Because
both
it's
about
permissive.
To be penalized 15 yards for pot kettle, and this is why. In that intro, Randy said,
I'm
okay
Randy's
with Marco
question.
Rubio, except when he teams up with that Chuck Schumer. And the reason why senators team up with people from the other side is because it takes 60 votes to pass anything.
Oh, yeah.
So sometimes you have to work with people that you don't agree with at all to make your point and get your law passed. And what did Randy just do? Randy went to the progressive liberal Democrat, Stephen Turkheimer. To team up, get his 60 votes, pass a filibuster, and all of a sudden attack the person he thinks is too establishment, Marco Rubio. So, Randy, we all do it. Congratulations. Welcome to politics. That was awesome. thus endeth today's lesson in how to get stuff done. Randy, you're learning. I'm proud of you, man. You actually just figured out how to game the system. You now, sir, we are going to get you an official Georgia Paul welcome to the establishment cap as soon as we ever get any of those printed up. All right. Back to business at hand. We're going to get one local thing in here today. First, some old business. We had the mayor of Bowman, Georgia, in here a couple of weeks ago. He talked about Kirby Smart visiting and Nick Saban visiting Bowman. They were all trying to get Mecole Hardman, and he's going to Georgia. So we got that going for us. And so now that we're talking about football, it's the big game weekend. Is that how we have to say that, Sully? Is that,
yes.
Okay.
The NFL.
The big game. We're only going to talk about the big game if we are promoting it. But if we're talking about a news story, the organization that puts on something called the Super Bowl actually has an official event that Atlanta is in the potential to be bidding for in the year either 2019 or 2020. And part of the deal, if you're a cold weather city, and if you walk outside right now, you would probably agree that this is not something you would go sunbathe in your yacht in today's weather. Atlanta's a cold weather city, so we don't really get the normal rotation that Tampa and Arizona and San Diego and Miami, I guess, are
Pasadena.
The main Super Bowl cities. They get to bid for these regularly, but if you build a new stadium, they'll kind of break that rule and let you have one. And if you do really good, we were kind of told when we built the Georgia Dome, maybe two, but we got one. So we're kind of set up to get one, and that's all we should really expect. That's what we were told as part of the package of building the stadium. And those of you that have read me long enough at the old website and the folks here, I think, in the studio know, there was probably not a bigger and more frequent public critic about this deal to build Mercedes-Benz Stadium than I was. I was not happy about it. I thought the city had major infrastructure things they could have used the package that was used for financing to finance some of the other things that Atlanta needed, specifically transit-oriented. I lost that battle. It's over. It's done. They're building the stadium. There's nothing I can do to stop that. What I'm finding interesting is that for us to get that Super Bowl, the bid package of the NFL requires that there be no local sales taxes on the tickets to the Super Bowl. So the actual ticket sales can't be sales taxed. The thing is, the cities that Atlanta is in competition for the 2019 or 2020 Super Bowl, all already by law, because it's a major convention event, if you will, don't do that. It's a typical concession given to convention cities that they don't tax things like this. Georgia is the only one that does. So for us to fix that, we have to pass legislation to waive both the state's portion of the sales tax and the city of Atlanta's portion. We're talking about $10 million, $5 million to Fulton County, City of Atlanta, and MARTA, $5 million to the state. And we've got people that don't want to do that because they say enough money to the billionaires. The funny thing is, it's the same people I was working with that generally were opposed to the stadium deal. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and suggest that their motivation might not be that they're really concerned about the dollars for the taxpayers, because the economic activity created by the Super Bowl, and I've got some of the studies, and anytime someone wants to spend taxpayers' money, they can always come up with economic activity, blah, blah, blah. Let's cut to the bottom line. If we don't have a Super Bowl, the state gets zero sales tax dollars additional. If we do have a Super Bowl, we give up the potential of $10 million that we wouldn't have anyway. And in exchange, we get $30 million just in sales tax. That doesn't count hotel motel taxes. That doesn't count rental car taxes. That doesn't count income taxes off the coffers. And that weekend, this particular weekend, is not a convention weekend for Atlanta. We don't normally attract any of the big shows or whatever. It's a cold weekend. People don't get out. They don't go to restaurants. They don't go to bars. We can fill up our hotels. We can fill up our restaurants. We can fill up our bars, which will then fill up cabs and Ubers. It's an economic driver to bring a Super Bowl, and you get a three-day commercial for Atlanta. There's a reason to do this. And for any other convention, if it was the Republican National Committee, we would be waiving a lot of other things and paying a lot of things in. The business community is putting money up. The people that are complaining about this aren't complaining because they're trying to save the little people. What they're going to do is they're going to take money out of waiters' pockets, out of bartenders' pockets, out of restaurateurs' pockets, out of Uber drivers' pockets. And more importantly, when you're talking about a state policy, they are going to cost the state treasury and the city of Atlanta and Fulton County actual sales tax dollars, because the amount of sales tax created by this Super Bowl and the activity surrounding it will be much greater than the amount that they're asking to be given up. You guys got 30 seconds. Either of y'all wish to tell me I'm wrong or just tell me how great that was, and we'll move on.
Well, you're right. I mean,
dead air.
I totally agree. I mean, well, I mean, the Falcons are definitely going to be in that Super Bowl. And so when you're talking about that, a lot of times you're talking about actual Georgians purchasing those tickets. So really, we're just returning money to the taxpayers.
Well, again, like I say, it's a net real dollar amount. I'm going to follow up with that as a column on GeorgiaPoll.com. You'll see that on Monday. In the meantime, Randy, I welcome you to the establishment club of learning how to work with Democrats to make your point. And that was just, I think if I had a heart, it would have grown three sizes this day. It just truly is when you watch the pups grow up and you know that they finally learn how to use the system for them, then you know one day soon you'll invite them to the club at the establishment. You'll break out the caviar and we'll all celebrate for the joyous, one that was lost is now found.